So today's topic, today's webinar is really important. It's a great topic. It's an intrinsic part of our sunnah. And we have a great guest who's going to offer her expertise and advice. Our topic today is Marriage 101, Staying Connected in a Disconnected World. Since the lockdowns worldwide and the ongoing pandemic has put a lot of stress, tremendous stress on couples and on families. And unfortunately, the divorce rate in the U.S., the reports that recently came out, have seen an increase of 34% from the same time last year. So it's disheartening. And the most of the couples are pointing to just this time that we're in, the lockdowns and the pandemic causing such great stress. So without wasting any more time, I'm very happy to introduce Dr. Afshana Haq. I will be putting her website in the chat. So if you want to learn about more of the work that she's doing later on, Dr. Haq is a marriage and family therapist based out of Houston, Texas. She specializes in Muslim family mental health and the unique stressors they face living in the West. The focus is on tips and advice today for Muslim couples to strengthen, reconnect, and how to help best support one another during this unusual time of this pandemic, especially. So, Dr. Haq, anything you want to add? And just welcome. Thank you so much for joining us. And I know we've been trying to coordinate this for a couple months, so I'm glad it finally worked out.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. It's such an important topic. I mean, we are in uncertain times. We're facing a pandemic. There's already been so many changes in our lives just as Muslims. So throw it all in together into the mix. I think it's so important to have seminars like these to help guide us a little bit in how to navigate these, again, these very difficult times. So thank you for having me.
Great. I'm so glad that, and I know this is a topic that our families have expressed a lot of interest in too. So I'm glad that we could bring this to them. So we're going to just start out by talking, what are the stressors? I mean, this is nothing we've ever had to face ever in our life. The pandemic, we keep talking about the pandemic and this big overarching thing, but what have you seen, the kind of things that it's kind of creating the stress or the problems or any issues you've seen particular to the pandemic on couples and on families?
Yeah, excellent question. So the biggest thing that I'm seeing is that not necessarily that there are like a whole host of brand new stressors that are coming up. I mean, there are certain things, you know, like the homeschooling and figuring out maybe financial stress or illnesses in the family. I mean, of course, that's all there and that's what we're all having to deal with. But a lot, I think some of the key issues that are really rocking our families is, I mean, if you think about it, I'm going to take a step back for a minute. So if we go back to just how Desi families, Muslim families, most families of cultures who are Muslim, if that makes sense, you know, there's more than just Desis. We don't have a great blueprint for handling conflict, right? If we look at our parents' generation and the way that their relationships were, perhaps, and how they handled anything challenging, anything stressful, we would have a lot of help from the villages, from extended family, from our neighbors, from the whole community around us. And so we are sort of trapped in this position. A, we don't have a lot of tools that have been passed down to us or examples of how to handle problems face on between just the spouses, right? Especially in this pandemic, that's what's happening. We're cut off from a lot of our families. We're cut off from a lot of our friends. We're having to handle things by ourselves. So A, our communication skills may be lacking, conflict resolution skills between spouses. Number two, we are any issues that may have already existed in the family, whether it's between the couples, whether it's parenting issues, what's happening is they're being magnified, right? Mm-hmm. It's so easy on a daily basis, you know, to go off to work and to be, you know, dropping off the kids, taking them to their activities, being focused on housework, that you're not really thinking about those issues as much. But now that we're sort of forced to just sit there and reflect on everything that has happened, and now there's nowhere to run. There's nowhere to distract ourselves. And if we don't have the appropriate tools, you know, a lot of people are saying, make sure you're spending enough time together. It's like, well, a lot of people are, you know, unfortunately spending too much time together, or have some alone time with each other. And that is absolutely a great idea. But if you don't have the proper, I guess just the understanding or guidance and being able to handle difficult situations, then that's going to feel even more difficult when you're faced, you know, with each other and you're like, okay, I know I have all these issues. And now that they're magnified, we really need to talk about them because a lot of our families are feeling like they're breaking. So, so I think what I'm seeing a lot is just that, not being distracted from existing problems and magnifying on top of the new problems of not being able to cope the way we were able to cope before, whether it's self-care in certain ways because we are prevented from connecting with family, connecting with community. So many masjids have shut down. So so many issues that we can talk about, unfortunately.
Yeah, there's so many big things you just talked about. So I want to kind of break down a couple of them. One of them is how you said we're basically cut off. A lot of us don't want to visit our parents or the people that kind of helped us and supported us in this time when we needed extra support. We needed babysitting or things like that. But now we're worried about exposing them or anything to the virus. So we purposely have kind of just become a nuclear family again, which in the Muslim community is unusual, actually. I mean, we're very used to being part of this multi-generational family and community. So that's really a big thing that actually you mentioned. Yeah. Also, the other thing that you mentioned I wanted to ask you more about was this thing of having the problems before. So it's not so much that they are new issues that the couples were facing. It was more like you said, there was a lot of distractors, so they could just kind of not face it head on as much as possible. But now when you are always at home, nobody's going to work, nobody's going to school, it keeps coming up over and over again. How do you kind of navigate that? I wanted to talk about it later, but since you brought it up now, I think it's important, you know, with you, when you have kids at home and things like that, and you want to kind of address these without it getting really heated. What do you suggest? Yeah.
Oh gosh, we can do a whole seminar on just that, right?
I know. Yeah.
You know, when I was talking about sort of conflict resolution skills, I think it's sort of the buzzword about these things, right? I think it's great that children witness their parents working through issues, right? Because it gives them an example of how to work through these issues in their own relationships in the future. And number two, it gives it a sense of normalcy. Couples have disagreements, you know, it's inevitable. Parents and children have disagreements. And it's not about having disagreements which make a family normal or stable. It's about how you deal with these disagreements and how you deal with conflict. So number one, first and foremost, yelling, name calling, all of these things, whether you do it in front of the children or not, is never okay. You should definitely not do it in front of the children. And don't do it just with each other. There needs to be a level of respect between spouses, always. I mean, it's great. Sometimes, you know, we get really comfortable with each other. And sometimes with that comfort, we forget about other, right? But I believe sometimes that could lead to our downfall. So there should be certain boundaries, no matter how close we are, how comfortable we are. I mean, that's excellent. Never prevent the closest in comfort by any means, but boundaries in terms of level of respect for each other. And this is not just Islamically, this is what they teach us, you know, for everybody. If anybody's ever taken any sort of anger management courses, when you are heated, when you are in this emotional space, in your mind, in your heart, you will not be able to
convey the message that you're trying to convey, A, in a way that you even want to be said. Number two, in a way that will be received well by your spouse, right? If you're in this threatening or blaming kind of a position, then immediately the only thing that your partner will be thinking about is all of the ways to argue against you, right? All of the ways to defend themselves. And if that's happening, then nobody's needs are going to be met. So they're no longer listening to you, really understanding what your needs are and what needs to happen in order to solve the problem. So the key is, instead of going into these disagreements with any sort of heatedness, is to think about, how can I disarm my spouse? And how can I phrase it in a way where it will actually be received? And that's a win-win situation for all parties, right? So number one, you know, we talk in business as the sandwich method or the Oreo cookie method, right? When you deliver a criticism, say something nice, then deliver it gently, and then tie it up again neatly, right? And what, you know, people have heard of Gottman and Sue Johnson and all of these great researchers in marriage. What they found is they found the ratio, they found the key, right? Exactly how many nice things you have to say, how to say the criticism, how to deliver it, and then in a way that is receptive. Can you guess what that number is?
Oh, gosh.
Good things to criticism. No, so if you want to get one criticism, how many good things do you need to say? Best guess.
Like three? I don't know.
You're very close. It's five.
Oh, my gosh. For one criticism.
For one criticism. Oh,
good. Wow. Right? That's a lot.
And it's so much, because when you're in a intimate relationship, you know, when you're so deeply connected with someone, what they say matters and what they say affects you. You know, someone you don't care about, if they're off the street, they say, hey, that's an ugly shirt. You're going to be like, I don't care. Like, who are you to me? That doesn't matter. But when you're in a relationship and your spouse is supposed to be the one who loves you, the one who cares about you, the one who thinks you're perfect, right? The one who celebrates you, your go-all, end-all, right? Then it hurts. Then, because what happens is you believe them 100%, and it usually stings the existing insecurities that you already have about yourself. It's like, man, if a person who loves me can't, thinks poorly of me, what does the rest of the world can think of me? So it hurts a lot more. It stings. So that's why providing that assurance. And when you do that, right, when you have to force yourself to sit back and think about five good things before you can say something again, you're no longer in that anger state yourself.
Because when you're in the, like here's your brain, right? Like this inner emotional state, this is fight or flight. This is the midbrain, the reptilian brain that has helped you survive and helped you run away. Our bodies do not know the difference between physical pain and emotional pain.
Wow.
So, and we no longer have natural predators in the world, right? We don't have, I mean, I say this in jest, but we don't have dinosaurs chasing after us, right? But we have evolved to be able to escape from those dinosaurs. If you see something that's threatening, we run. Now, what are the threatening things in our lives now? There's no more dinosaurs. We have no lions or saber-toothed tigers or anything for that matter. But who hurts us the most? Our relationships, right? Our moms, our brothers, our sisters, our spouses, the people closest to us have the capacity to hurt us the most. But how does our body perceive it? We've evolved this way for thousands of years. We're really good at protecting ourselves. So we react in a way as if a dinosaur is coming after us, about to eat us.
Wow.
And that's why it becomes so painful. It becomes so heated. Even though, I mean, inshallah, nobody's chasing each other with knives or anything, right? But even simple arguments can feel like that, because your body's going off, it's setting off alarms saying threat. This is a threat. Oh, that hurts. Okay. I know what I need to do. I need to fight or I need to flight. I need to flee. I need to get out of here. And that's how we react, right? As soon as our spouses say something, we either lose, right? We start yelling back, shut down, right? We say, you know what? I'm not doing this anymore. And we retreat. And so because of that, we have to get out of this amygdala, this emotional portion of our brain, and we have to get out here in the prefrontal cortices. And it is these regions of our brain that allow us to put together sentences in a way that will be received well. So if you take time to calm yourself, you know, it's like, okay, I'm really heated right now. This is not a good idea to talk. You know, when you are in a better state, go to your spouse, be like, hey, I really appreciate how I noticed, you know, you helped our son or our daughter do their homework. That was really nice. Mm-hmm. You know, I really appreciate how you've been the number one provider for our family or a co-provider for our family. Thinking about, even if it's little, like, you know, I really like your beard. It's nice. You know, whatever it is you can think of. And then it's like
anything to kind of diffuse that. Yeah.
Like, I know, especially related to the topic. So if you're going to bring up a topic where you have to clean the dishes more, right? Mm-hmm. Talk about things that you've noticed they have been doing around the house first. Because if you go jump into, you need to do the dishes. Well, I did this and I did this and I did this. Well, guess what? You've already taken care of that. You've already pointed out everything they've done. And so when they hear that you see them and that you acknowledge their what's right about them, then they'll be like, okay, well, she sees that. So she must not think I'm all bad. So what is it that she has to say? Right. And it's like, okay. And then of course the delivery, right. You know, not, you know, your mother never taught you, right. You're good for nothing. Why did you do it? Right. It's supposed to be, you know what? I know you're really busy and I know you're tired at the end of the day. I am exhausted as well. How can we do this? You know what? I really need help with the dishes. Is that something you want to do? Or if better, can you help just like give the kids a shower tonight? Negotiating is key. Right. If we are willing to give and take a little bit, it's great because then in a marriage, in a relationship, in any relationship, you're never going to get everything you want. And that's okay because the other person's never going to get what they want either. Yeah. But you're trying to come to a place where both of you are getting something and that's good enough. And that keeps a peace in the house and that you're not fighting with each other and you appreciate each other and you respect each other. And this should be our goal. Right. So coming in gently. And then remember not to bring in, you know, 10 different arguments into one argument, right? Not bringing in the past, like focus on the present. If you need to talk about in the past, if you need to talk about the past, take a separate time to be able to do that with each other, right? You know, do it in a time where you're not, again, not heated, where you're able to think about good things and we're able to have empathy. Because when we are in a stressful position, when we are in a, when we have these cortisol and all these different hormones running through our bodies, our capacity for empathy shuts off. And again, this is evolutionary because, you know, the dinosaur, if it comes after us, you know, say, oh, you must be so hungry. You probably haven't eaten in 3 days. If you stand there and do that, you're going to get eaten. You're dead, right? Yeah. So with our spouses, in order to have successful, fruitful, productive conversations, there needs to be a very high degree of empathy. And that empathy is not going to be there if they are sort of stress-free, right? If you are in this fight or flight, highly just, you know, unregulated state. I'm not saying emotions are bad. Emotions are actually what helps us get through the day. You know, it helps us love. It helps us connect. It helps us proceed. But when these emotions go out of control, right, there's three different phases we can be in. There's the optimal arousal state, right? You're calm, you're present. You know what you're saying. You're still feeling, but you're present. And then there's the hyper arousal where you've just sort of lost it. You're in the state where you're angry, you black out. And then there's a hypo arousal, which is just as unproductive as being in a hyper arousal where you shut down completely and there's no connection, right? So we don't want to be in either extremes, you know, just like in Islam, everything in moderation. We want to be in this optimal arousal state when we are approaching our spouses. And when our children see this, like, oh, mommy and daddy really love each other. They're saying these nice things. Oh, there's a problem, but they're working it out. And this is how they worked it out. You know, they're taking note. And then they learn to do that with each other. They learn to do that with their parents. You know, it's a win-win situation for all. I know I've said a lot today.
I had a, you brought up a good point, like when the children see you. So I did wonder about that. When you are, you know, all couples have disagreements, it's going to happen and it's inevitable. And in this stage, you can't leave the house. You can't try to coordinate it when the kids are at school, things like that. Is it better for them to move like to the room and close the door? Is there some best practice that might be better for the kids? Or is it just more about, like you said, just, you know, being more aware of your voice and your tone, even if the kids are around, you're able to kind of navigate it.
If they, and not in the healthiest ways. Number two, our kids pick up on tension. So even if we are not arguing in front of them, they know there's tension between mom and dad. and that speaks volumes, right? They're very perceptive. And if they see that, if they sense that tension, but they're not seeing how it's resolved, or they're fighting, they go into their room, something magical happens and they're fine, they're going to think, oh, problems are supposed to magically resolve, right? They're never learning sort of what happens when there is tension in the room. But given that, though, I would definitely consider topic. Some topics are not appropriate to talk about in front of children. Bringing in children into the conversation 100%.
Yeah, so I was just saying, if you do decide to have a discussion in front of your children, they should never be involved. Not even for a second. It should never be about them. If it is about them, these are discussions that are not to be had in front of them, right? So consider the topic, consider the appropriateness of the topic. If it's about just dishes and chores and kids' homework, maybe some things they do need to listen, but never anything that involves them. Because again, kids are very perceptive. They carry a lot of things with them. They always, they have this tendency to believe that it's their fault. And so you never want your children to think that anything that's happening between you and your spouse has anything is because of their fault. Even if they're the source of the argument, which unfortunately a lot of times they are, right? Oh, you didn't help with the homework. I helped them yesterday. You didn't help them today. Well, then they're thinking, oh my gosh, I'm creating a rift between my parents because of my homework. Mm-hmm. I think it's their fault. When really, it's because the couples weren't able to negotiate how they were going to spend the time. So it's the couple. It's never the child. So never in a position where they might feel it's their fault. Never if it's an inappropriate topic. And if they are witnesses, let them only be that, but completely separate from the conversation. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you're not there.
It's a very sensitive.
Yeah.
I mean,
if you're not comfortable with the process of the discussion, if you're like, you know what, I've read an article, I've heard what people have said and how to argue, but I don't know if I can do that yet. There might be some yelling and screaming. You know yourself best and you know what you need to do in order to keep things appropriate. So yeah, if you can take it, if you do take it to the bedroom or if you do take it outside in the car, whatever, I would still have a conversation with your child after that. Like, you know what? And it can be very simple. Like, mommy and daddy didn't agree on something. You might've noticed we were mad at each other, but we talked about it. We worked it out. Everything's okay now. We love each other and we love you. Simple as that.
That's so important. I think kids, you know, because their world is just them. So it's very hard for them to understand that this really has nothing to do with you. So I really appreciate you saying that, you know, circling back with them and just reassuring them, we love you and we are good, and just a hug and maybe a chance to ask, you know, do you have any questions, or, you know, just to make sure that they're okay with it. So I do appreciate that. How can couples carve out any type of alone time when you're in the house together all the time with the kids? What do you, especially when you, I mean, I understand if you have older kids, teenagers, things like that, it's okay. The couple can go out by themselves for a walk and things like that. But when you have little ones who do need to be supervised all the time, what do you suggest? What are your suggestions for couples to kind of reconnect?
Like you said, it's really important thinking about what phase in life you're in and the age of your child and what's appropriate. If they're really, really young, they're sleeping more. You're probably not sleeping 14, 15 hours the way your child is. So taking advantage of their nap times, taking advantage of their sleep times. And I know some kids are just not good sleepers. If they like to sleep really late and you don't get that nighttime, wake up early. A lot of kids who like to sleep late don't wake up early, or vice versa. A lot of kids who wake up early, perhaps they sleep early. So whenever they are, when they are asleep, making sure, even if it's, and a lot of times we think it has to be this elaborate candlelight dinner where we're connecting and we have to dress up in ball gowns, but you know, that's not necessarily the case. Even if you have, and it's quality, even if you have 10 to 15 minutes every night, you know, if it's consistent, 10 to 15 minutes every night where you're just taking the time to sit back. A lot of times we turn this quality time into, let me tell you about everything you're doing wrong. make that a separate time. So schedule time for discussions, healthy discussions, and schedule a time for quality. We can call it love time, or we can call it our connection time. So make sure you're scheduling that. Scheduling is so important. Structure is so important. We're having to reschedule and restructure our lives because there's no natural structure set in place for us. It's so easy to, you know, be in pajamas, be in school, eat at different times, right? Sit down together as a family. You'd be like, you know what? We need structure. We need routine. So important for kids. So important for couples. And when you're structuring your routine, don't just schedule your work times and your homework times. Schedule the down times. Schedule the nap times. Schedule the connection time. Schedule the figuring out our issues time. And when you do that, even if it's a little bit, if it's consistent every day and you commit to it, you know, this has to be a schedule that you can commit to. Once you sit down, the best schedules are created collaboratively, so that you have everybody's input, so nobody feels like something's unfair or they're doing something that they don't want to do. After you do that, assess it. Be like, how realistic is this? And then make changes accordingly. And after you do that, commit, right? Commit. And if it doesn't work out, address it the next week. Be like, okay, you know what? Maybe this was a long shot. This didn't really work out for us. Let's try moving this here, or let's try minimizing this and increasing that until you find something that works for you. You know, we've been in this pandemic for a long time. Unfortunately, we don't know how much longer it's going to last. So you have time to really juggle with the schedule and find the right one that fits for you, your family, for yourself, right? You want that alone time with your spouse. Sometimes we need alone time with ourselves. You know, we want time to connect with ourselves, connect with Allah, connect with whatever it is that you need to do. You know, when kids are, sometimes even if you're at home all the time, when kids are in school and spouses are at work, well, you're at home, you stay home. But or even if you did work yourself, then you would get that, even if it's not a long time, it's just separation time where you just have a different change of environment. So if you're not getting that anymore, building that into your schedule. And it, again, it doesn't need to be an hour or 2 hours, although that would be nice. Do whatever is realistic for you. And if you think about it, 5 minutes every day, it adds up, right? It's like, oh, that's a, you know, eventually that's a whole hour that I just had over these past couple of weeks. And I couldn't imagine having that much time to myself. So building that in, making it quick, right? If you are just asking, there's apps where you can ask your spouse each other, like where you can sort of rediscover each other. Like, oh, what are your hopes and dreams? What it was when you first got married is probably not the same. You know, what are your biggest fears? What are your concerns? What do I do that makes you happy? You know, what do you love about me? What do I love about you? So even asking simple questions, connecting with each other, or even sitting in silence with each other, if you're not a verbal kind of couple, and if you're more about touch, you know, holding each other, holding each other's hands, getting peace and comfort from each other. Some couples I know, I mean, mashallah, they read Quran together, they read stories with each other, or they watch movies with each other. Just whatever works for you as a couple that's easy, that's quick, and that provides peace in your lives.
I love that. I love that you mentioned, And I think it's important for the spouses to both know, like, this time we're carving out, this is our special time together. So there's boundaries around it. It's like, we're not going to bring up issues right now. This is not the time to kind of nitpick each other. This is just, we are going to just hang out and just kind of relax right now. So I think that's a great idea. I never thought of it that way, that you can kind of like section it off. So also the other person doesn't feel, oh no, what does she want to talk about now? And then like all the anxiety starts coming in, like, oh gosh, what is this going to be about? But it's really just, you know, just kind of hanging out and reconnecting. So I like that a lot. I also really appreciated that you mentioned just for each person to kind of find their own alone time too, because that is so hard right now. With everybody home, I think, like you said, even if you're just going out to your, you know, your back patio or backyard or something, just for some fresh air, your car, you know, just having your coffee, like outside of the house, even if it literally is just outside the door. I've even just gone right outside the front door and closed the door just for some, okay, they don't know where I am right now. And this is okay. It feels good.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of amazing how it doesn't have to be a long time, but you do have to be intentional about it. That's the thing. It's the time escapes you. So
And being compassionate with yourself, you know, your kids don't have to be perfect. They don't need to be making hundreds right now. The house does not have to be squeaky clean. If they're alive, if they're healthy, mm-hmm. if they're getting their vitamin C's, if they're fed mm-hmm. something, you know, this isn't going to last forever. And reconnecting with nature. So, you know, like you said, fresh air, feet in the mm-hmm. grass, you know, mm-hmm. Doing Dhikr. You know that when I was talking about the prefrontal cortex, subhanAllah,
yes.
there's studies out of Harvard that say even 5 minutes of meditation, 5-10 minutes of mm-hmm. meditation, focused, it increases the density of the prefrontal cortex. Now, what do we do 5 times a day, right? That's basically our meditation, the dhikr, the prayer that we do, the focused time that we have with Allah. What is it doing? It's increasing the matter in our brains. It's increasing the density so that we are better prepared to handle our challenges, to face our relationships to you mm-hmm. In the best way.
In about 5-6 minutes, I'll get to the questions. So if you have any questions, please send them in and we'll go over them. So I know you talked about the problems that you had before, even the pandemic, they kind of now are exacerbated in this like fishbowl we're just in all the time. But what about the other side where people have been pretty okay, but then now this is just kind of, they seem to be fighting a lot more than they did before. Like they were actually seemed to be okay, I guess. But then now this has kind of created a whole different issue that they're not navigating very well. What are your kind of thoughts on
that? A couple things. So first, thinking about, I use this analogy, if you have a computer, right? If you run an easy software, the computer seems to be doing just fine. You run a rigorous software, all of a sudden computer's having problems. So things like that, like perhaps you had little things here and there, but the existing sort of coping strategies that we have, time with our parents, time with our extended family, time away at work, time outside, time exercise, self-care, help sort of like, I also use the analogy of the cup, right? You have a cup, you have some stressors, but you're able to cope with it. You know, the stressors are down. If you're in a position where you have these things, but you don't have your existing coping strategies, they just build and build and build, right? Perhaps there were some issues in the household. For example, I'm going to go way back. Like, let's society, culture, unfortunately, it's really not set up ideally for women to be having all the things that we have on our plates. Like more and more women are educated, more and more women have careers, and more women are choosing to do all of these things. But our society and our culture and our norms are not set up for that to be sustainable. You know, women are expected to be superwomen. We're expected to make the money and take care of the children and keep the house clean. You know, like we're expected to do all of it. And this is, again, this is very unrealistic. It's very unsustainable. And perhaps we were able to get by, you know, with how things were set up. Barely. A lot of us were already dangling on the fence of like sanity versus insanity because we had so much on our plate, right? But then now with this pandemic where our external sources of support may have been taken away from us. Like you said, perhaps grandma was watching the kids, but grandma can't watch the kids anymore. Perhaps we had babysitters, nannies, people helping with the cleaning. You know, these are more healthier setups, healthier systems where our livelihoods are actually realistic and doable. But now that if all of that has been taken away, you're faced with just you two. And if husband wasn't ready or wasn't very hands-on with household things, if that never happened before, and now it's happening to happen now, well, then that will bring a whole string of issues, right? Like just starting from, why don't you want to help? I've done this for so long, right? Do you feel like, you know, we're sort of not at the same level? You know, what does that mean? And so it brings up a lot more things that may have not come up before. Right. It's so, and it's not necessarily, I mean, there could be a lot of things. The example that I'm giving specifically, it wasn't even about only about the spouse's relationship with each other. It's about a system. It's about our cultural perspectives, perhaps, that have that have not evolved at a place where it needs to be, given our situations now, given how our lives are changing, and given how, like I said, women are more educated, more women are working. And so things are changing, and that's why we are feeling the way we are. So, you know, so often in our lives, not even just during the pandemic. And so it's really pushing this, hey, I need you in my life in ways I may have needed it before, but I need you more now than ever. And if that's not adding up, and this is for both spouses, not just like the husband for the wife, it's also for the wife for the husband, right? It's like when we're in this place where we need each other now more than before, but we're unable to meet these needs because we've never had to do it before, or it's so much more intense and we're not quite sure how to navigate it, then things can, I mean, it can sort of exponentially go in a negative direction.
I'm here. I just got cut off for a little bit, but hang on. Okay. Oh, so much to unpack. It's so much to unpack, and I know there's like so many questions about this. My camera is not working, but I'm not going to fuss with it right now. A question that I had also about. Actually, a question that came up earlier from someone else that was asking me, they couldn't come on, but they wanted to make sure that has happened actually in society in general, which is that, like you were saying, women being educated, women having all these jobs, all this stuff, even in our conventional Western society, women have had to now kind of give that up and turn to being the full-time caregiver that they were not before. And this is not just, you know, in our community, in our Muslim community, this is actually just now rampant everywhere. So I think, you know, there's a lot of negativity coming from that, probably of, you know, a lot of maybe sadness that they kind of have to like go through, that they went through all this and now they're having to not be able to pursue their career, and this is, you know, something that they've been put in a position. So
yeah, I mean, the patriarchy definitely it exceeds far beyond just our cultures. It's across the world. The pay of men is more than women, no matter who you are or what culture you come from, and it's because of that a lot of women are like, well, you make more money than I do, so I guess I'll be the one that drops my career that I've worked so hard for. And you're probably not making money because it's not based on merit, right? A woman can have the same exact job. They can same exact job. They can have work just as hard, if not more, but men are typically paid more. And that's just the reality of the situation. So a lot more women are having to back down, saying, okay, well, I guess since the kids are at home now, we can't hire anybody, right? So one of us has to stay home, it's going to be me. So yeah, you'll have a lot of, you can have a lot of resentment. You can have a lot of upset. And then it's like, wait a minute, some women are working, they're working from home. So now it's, I'm working from home. A spouse may be working from home as well, but then she's still shouldering a lot of the previous responsibilities before. It's like, wait a minute, if we're doing the exact same thing, you know, why shouldn't you sort of help around the house as well? You know, and it, at the end of the day, it comes down to negotiating, right? Renegotiating whatever system you had before. Perhaps it felt fair, even if it didn't, it just worked out somehow. But now, if there was any bit of unfairness, again, it's sort of magnified in this situation. And it's like, wait a minute, why aren't you doing this? But if we start building our expectations without ever communicating that to our husbands, it's going to cause a problem, right? So making sure you sit down and say, hey, I appreciate everything you do. I'm tired. I'm overwhelmed. You know, talk about yourself, not you don't do anything, but it's getting a lot for me and I really need your help. Like, can we figure out how to manage this? Can we figure out a way that works better for this? And then coming up with those kinds of solutions will be a lot more healthy and productive than sort of building some expectations or, you know what, this is how it should have been, or expecting any kind of negative reactions from the spouse, which may happen, but taking breaks as you need to when you have these conversations so that you can readdress. If we let things go completely and just sort of silently suffer, which a lot of us do, it's only going to build that resentment. It's not going to get any better. So making sure you do address the things that bother you in a way that is healthy and receptive.
That was beautiful. Yeah. Letting it build up. That's probably the worst thing ever. So we have some questions here. I want to make sure we get to them as we wind down. So I'm going to first go to the chat. I think if you can see in the chat, it's to all panelists from Sister Sadia. She was saying, any strategies for when a spouse doesn't let you calm down? Sometimes it gets too heated, it seems. If you're angry and ask your spouse for space, but he still gets in your face with comments like, why are you so angry? If this happens repeatedly, it makes you more angry. Doesn't give you the opportunity to calm down, to discuss the issue rationally, and how to deal with this when he does this to the kids as well. It makes the kids more upset, which we did talk about, the kids. So any thoughts on what she's saying?
Yeah,
it sounds like she's trying to kind of diffuse the situation, but it's just gotten too heated. Yeah.
Sometimes, and I think it's key when she said, he says, why are you so angry? So a lot of times it's the timing. That's everything. If we wait till we're angry this level and then we start diffusing, sometimes that's too late. Or if we wait till angry this level, it may not even be possible anymore to diffuse that because it's, you've sort of already popped off the cliff. What's so important is to be aware of yourself. If you're thinking, so catch yourself before you get angry. And this has to be a two-way street. It can't just be from one partner. Encouraging your spouse to do the same. Hey, there's our calm states and then there's our anger state. We know what upsets us, right? And we know what's happened. Perhaps you notice that your jaws start clenching, you start making fists, you're getting annoyed, you're like, I know it's about to go bad. Or maybe there's a topic that's particularly triggering. It's like, you know what, or if a spouse says something that's triggering. So having conversations about that before it gets to that point is so incredibly important. Being able to catch yourself before you get angry. So if the conversation is going in a direction that is not going to end well, and you probably know what conversations those are, asking for that break beforehand and making sure you not only ask for the break, but create a to come together time. And so, hey, this is getting out of hand. I love you. I want to finish this conversation. I think it's very important. Can we please take 5 minutes? Can we please take an hour? If there's something that requires 2 days, you know, whatever it might be, can we please take 2 days? And, or even if you start out, a lot of times we start conversations in the wrong time, right? You've been stressed out all day, right, with the kids, you know, trying to manage their fights, their homework, yourself, your work, everything. And then at the end of the day, you would have snapped at anything, right? And if so, checking in with each other, hey, there's something important that I really need to talk about. Is it a good time, right? You know what? I've had a really rough day. I'm really stressed out. I don't know if it's going to be very productive, and I'm afraid I might snap at you. I don't want that to happen. Is it okay if we talk tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. or tomorrow morning at 1:35 p.m.? I have a break between my meeting, you know, so being able to offer a time, because sometimes if it's really important to a spouse and you ask for a break, they might think, well, then you don't care about my concerns, or are we never going to talk about this? Is this never going to get resolved? So in summary, before it gets bad, learn your trigger points, learn your emotions, be very in touch with yourself and know what causes you to be irritated. Don't wait to take the break when it's already, the emotions and the anger is this high. Try to take it before it even gets to that point. And always make sure you schedule in a let's have this conversation at this point in time. So the other partner is not wondering what happened or whether it's going to be resolved or not.
I think that's fantastic. The scheduling, the time thing, it gives you both a chance to kind of recollect your thoughts and calm down a little bit. But it doesn't mean that you've forgotten about it. It's important to you. You're letting your spouse know it's important to you and that you want to address it, but just, let's just give this time and then let's, you know, circle back to it. So I love that. All right. So looking in the Q&A, one person said, when we are at home with all the work, office, home, and kids, we're unable to manage time for reading Quran. Any time management suggestions are very much welcomed. And you did kind of touch on this, the time blocking. It's tough. It is tough when you have so many things it just, the day kind of blends. So any advice on time management for families at home?
Sure. You know, like you said, as we mentioned, scheduling, having a set, sitting down and writing it out, putting it on a big whiteboard, right? Or getting a whiteboard, getting butcher paper, whatever, writing it, hey, this is what we're going to go for. At this time, we're going to do this. And again, the key is start with your existing schedule and make small changes, right? So if you're used to waking up at 11 a.m. or 1 p.m. for whatever, let's say we've completely become nocturnal, whatever it might be, change it in 15-minute increments until you get to where you want to be. Our bodies like to keep things the same. That's just how we are as human beings. We don't like change. And so any change that's going to happen in your lives need to be small. So don't schedule for yourself, I'm going to read a whole jizz a day. If you're not, if you're used to reading not very often, say, okay, family, let's get together and start with one ayah a day. And if you've been able to carve out that time and that structure, then slowly add on. So start with a schedule that's not too different from your own. Make sure it's realistic and build on it slowly. Again, we have time. Unfortunately, this pandemic's not going anywhere. Slowly develop a system that works for you and your family.
Excellent. Let's see. The next one says, Dr. Afshana mentioned something about not including children when arguing. Could you elaborate? I think we elaborated enough, but if you wanted to just touch on that again, what you meant.
You broke up a little bit. I didn't hear you halfway. If you can please repeat.
Sorry. In the Q&A, someone is asking, Dr. Afshana mentioned something about not including children when arguing. Could you elaborate, please? I think you mentioned it, but maybe they just wanted more clarification what you meant by that.
Yeah, I mean, if it's not including them when it's an inappropriate topic, or if it's about them, because you don't, like, if they're not about them, but perhaps they were, their lives are a source of the trigger. Like if you guys are fighting over who needs to help them with homework, I think was the example that I gave, they might interpret that as, oh my gosh, I'm causing problems with my parents. Even though it's not their fault, it's just a matter of you guys figuring out who needs to take care of what when. Or if it's a matter of, the kid didn't do well on the exam, right? Well, you didn't study with them good enough. So if it's about them particularly, I would not have those kinds of conversations in front of them. Number two, if it's a sexually related topic, depending on how comfortable you are with that children or how old they are, you know, that is probably, needless to say, not to be in front of kids. If it's about in-laws, unless you can do it really well and really tactfully, I would be careful with those types of topics. But anything else, you know, figuring out chores, figuring out, hey, I don't like the way you talk to me, I don't like what the word that you use, and just if you're able to have it in sort of the style that I propose, where you're starting off with empathy, you're listing off the things you appreciate about them. And then other things that we didn't go into, but these are the things that I work on in therapy, right? We say, hey, this is what I heard you say, because a lot of times our spouses are saying something, but we're only understanding what we're worried about they're going to try to say to us. So sometimes we're arguing things that they didn't even say. So checking in, say, hey, I heard you say this. Is that what you said? If I was in your shoes, I would feel this way. Is that how you feel? Gosh, that's probably really tough. How can I support you? What do you need from me? So this is sort of the structure that you develop in there. But back to the original question, using your best judgment in what topics you think would be appropriate versus inappropriate in front of your children.
I really like about the what you just said. This last thing is very appropriate, actually, is a lot of times what the other person is saying is not what we are interpreting it as. And so reframing that question just to clarify, because a lot of the miscommunication is just in the delivery itself. So if we can just make sure, I want to make sure I'm answering the what you are asking.
Is what you're
saying? That was great. Yeah, that's a great point.
Or we missed half of it. Let's say they say something that
flooded.
We're thinking about it and we miss half of what they just said. And then, exactly.
We're there in midpoint. Yeah. Really, really important to just reframe active listening. Just check again and make sure before you respond. So there's a sunnah of the hadith. Someone's asking that says there are more women in hell since they were ungrateful to their husbands. And how do you define gratefulness in today's context? It's an interesting question, I guess.
Gratefulness.
How do you define gratefulness? Yeah.
Gratitude is so important. I mean, again, they're doing so much research in this day and age, saying that that's what helps us. I mean, it's so easy to get stuck on the things that are negative, right? Because actually we were made that way. Allah knows how he made us. And that's why he tells us the things that we need to do, right? Be grateful, be thankful. It's if he's asking us to be thankful to him, right? Our creator, and that can be challenging for us sometimes, then it's going to be that much harder to be grateful to our spouses. Now, I don't limit it to just your husband. I think it's important to be grateful both ways, right? Because if you're in a position where you're not feeling appreciated, it's going to be difficult to appreciate someone else. And that's, again, that's human nature. In terms of how that was phrased, I mean, that's a different topic altogether in terms of the hadith, and I won't get into that. But just from like a human point of view, a psychological point of view, how our brains work point of view, it's important that there is a balance. And that's what I always keep coming back to. If there is imbalance, if there is injustice in the relationship, the positive stuff is going to be difficult, right? So in a situation where, let's say, there is balance and there is justice and everybody has negotiated, everybody's doing everything the right way, you have enough support, your husband has enough support, and then you're still not grateful, well, then now you're just nitpicking, right? Then I could say, yeah, that's a problem. But again, you have to think about the context, right? So yes, if you're in a situation where all of your needs are met, all of his needs are met, things are going well, and you still can't be grateful, that's a different story altogether. Now, if you're in this situation where there's not necessarily, I guess, fairness around how things are being handled, you're overburdened, you're overpushed, you're not appreciated, you're abused, then saying, oh, but you need to be grateful, does not make sense, right? We still have to use our logic, right? We still have to understand what kind of context will bring that. So if you want to get to that gratitude, you have to deal with all of it. If you just skip it all and say, well, I'm going to try to be grateful and ignore my problems, you're not going to be very successful. So I think that's something that's really important to understand as Muslims as well, is we need to address everything. We need to address the full picture so that we can be in a place where we want to be as ideal Muslims. But that's not going to happen if we let everything else go. So just like saying, oh, I'm going to have trust in Allah and not take my medicine, right? Because Allah is the healer, right? Allah is the source of shifa. But we're not going to exercise. We're not going to eat right. I'm going to keep eating, I don't know, greasy food and biryani and rice and spaghetti and everything that we love. And I'm going to sit down and I'm going to make dua that everything's going to be okay. And I'm going to be grateful for my food. That's not going to happen. You're not going to be healthy, no matter how grateful you are for what you're given, if it's not being done in the correct context. Now, if you're exercising, if you're eating healthy and you're grateful for everything that you have in your life, alhamdulillah, it's the full picture. That's the same way that your relationships work. You can't have a toxic relationship, an unbalanced, an unfair relationship, be grateful and expect everything's going to be okay. So you work on your marriage, you work on the balance, you negotiate, you respect each other, you love each other, and then you're grateful for everything that's happening in your life. You're grateful for, I mean, being grateful at a certain level, of course, working on that, working on your brain to think that way, to develop that habit. Always good. Always work on that on a daily basis, but don't let the other stuff go is what I'm trying to say. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it's absolutely. And it, you know, it goes back to that. We have to do the work, you know, the other incredibly, yes, well-known hadith, you tie your camel and you turn
camel,
along.
Right?
So you still have to do the work. It doesn't mean you don't do it, but you do leave it to Allah. And something else I want to emphasize, kind of circle back with that you had mentioned before about when you criticize someone once, but then you come back with those five really positive statements, that is gratefulness. I mean, you are forcing yourself to say, you know what, I may not like this one thing, but wow, I really do appreciate so many other things about them. So I think that's always a great way for us to find gratefulness in each other. So I appreciate that. Okay, so the last one, I was anticipating an in-law question would come in. Sometimes in-laws are intrusive, not respectful, and live for a few months a year with you. So what we were kind of mentioning before, the multi-generational families, how do you communicate with your spouse to help you create boundaries for privacy? And we will finish with this, the last one. So what's your advice on that, Dr. Huck?
Very, very, very carefully. Man, if you're doing, because it's like there's a sensitivity between you and then the sensitivity when it comes to parents, right? I've seen a lot of couples where it's like, I'll take all kinds of negativity when it comes my way. But if somebody starts talking about my parents or start talking about my children, that's it. That's where I draw the line. So we'll take a lot of abuse, but we're very protective of our family, right? And so when you're talking about in-laws, your spouse's family, whichever direction it's coming from, the wife about her parents or the husband about his parents, if you're using 5 for each other, 10, I would say, when it comes to parents, even if they're little, right? I appreciate your parents. I appreciate that they watch our children. I appreciate when she cooks. I appreciate when, you know, whatever it might be, I appreciate just the extra set of eyes so that I can go to the bathroom while my kids are watching TV and she's there making sure nobody's killing each other, or, you know, whatever it might be, 10 things. Never anything that I said, rules of engagement when it comes to your spouse, more so when it comes with the in-laws, never any name calling, never any criticism, being as gentle as possible, but being firm, right? It doesn't mean it's okay for your rights as a spouse to be bulldozed. So if you need that privacy, be like, hey, you know, let's set a time where we can all be together. And I love that. And it's great. And it's fine. We need that as a family. I was wondering if we can also set aside some time where there is some privacy between, you know, I miss you. I miss our time together. I need some time to regroup. I need some time to regenerate. And a lot of times this directness, if it goes well, alhamdulillah, perfect. You know, if you're being, being very grateful and respectful and generous and all that stuff, that's wonderful. Sometimes, unfortunately, we just have to carve out ways and think about, hey, what is going to cause the least amount of friction? What is going to be more acceptable? So if it's, hey, I need to get some work done at a coffee shop, make it about work. Don't make it about any time away from my in-laws, because that can be seen as disrespectful. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes even bringing that up could be difficult. So it's like, hey, I need to get some stuff done. I need to run some errands. Work in your self-care time in a way that is not triggering for the spouse. Because I know culturally it could be very difficult. Asking for time away from family could be seen as very negative. And also, if you examine some cultures, people do it all the time, right? There are just some people are more tactful about it. Some people are not. So making it sort of, not very serious. Like, hey, this is just something that I need. I love your family. It's not about them, you know, because that's what it really comes down to, right? Oh, you need time away. Do you not like my mom? Do you not like my dad? So not letting it to get to that intensity. It's like, no, it's not, you know, whether it's true or not, right? Let's not get into that. But figuring out how to carve some time away from yourself in a way that will be more respectful. It's like, hey, you know what? My spouse doesn't like it when we try to create privacy or do anything without them, but I know he's respectful of me getting my work done, or he's respectful of making sure our child is studying correctly. It's like, okay, well, we're going to go to the library, spend some time on their schoolwork, or, you know, whatever it is, ways that sometimes you have to get really creative in doing that, things that you know that they will respect and not take offense to. And like I said, I've worked on this with my clients in the past. We really have to sit down. It's like, yeah, they'll find this offensive, but you know what? They let me do this and they don't seem to mind when I do that. I was like, okay, well then do more of that. Think about what works and go along the same vein. Study your other family members, right? Like, it's like, oh, I noticed X, Y, and Z said that and they didn't have a problem with it. I'm going to try that route. So just being perceptive and sensitive and respectful, and inshallah, making less of dua and going from there.
I love how you put it on yourself, and that's so true. Instead of, you know, framing it that we're always with them all the time, or it's, you know, she's, you know, your mom is always like coming with us. Instead, just I miss you. Just like your feelings, letting them know that this is actually me. I actually miss our alone time. I miss speaking. I miss hanging out with you. Do you think we could do this? And I think when you put it in a way, the way you are saying exactly, which is taking ownership of the feelings that you are having, and it has really nothing to do with them. It's just looking deep inside and saying, well, what are you feeling right now? That's what you need to express. So hopefully, inshallah, that's great advice. So thank you. So we're kind of at the end. I'm sorry, my camera went out at the end. I don't even know what happened, but I am here still. Jazakallah khair so much. Thank you so much. This was really such an eye-opener. This was lovely. And if you're in Houston, you could, you know, contact her locally too. She is there. She practices out of Houston. So inshallah, Dr. Haq, I look forward to talking to you again. And thank you so much for today.
Thank you. Thank really you for lovely. Having me. It was great talking with you.
Be safe. Take care.
You too. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, everyone. Assalamu alaikum.